And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus on this Tuesday, January 28th. Welcome, everybody. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with...
We're having some technical difficulty. All of a sudden, Dean and I didn't have audio in the studio, and it came on, and it was an echo. And
so are we live now? Or
I think we're live. It's been a little bit fun.
Is this live, or is it Memorex?
Oh, nobody remembers that commercial but us.
Good. Right? All
We're
right.
Far too old.
We'll try this again.
Yay!
Welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. I want to thank everybody for joining us. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with our Ag Director, Bridget Riedel. And, boy, it's a beautiful, I mean, for January standards, we wouldn't accept this in June, but for this time of the year, it is absolutely beautiful out there. Temperatures right around 40 degrees. Get out and enjoy it. The record is 44 today. I just don't think we're going to get there. We're going to be just shy. But, you know, hey, we're in record territory, and that's bonus weather for this time of the year when we could be dealing with what we did last week, 23 below, and now we're, what, a good 60 degrees warmer than that today.
Well, and that's a big, nice upside that things have gotten far, far better today because, let's be honest, folks just wanted a little bit of a break. So we're going to have this warm up before we get a clipper system this weekend, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it looks like we do have a little bit of light snow coming towards the area as we head into, looks like Sunday looks to be the main day right now for any light snow entering the area as we've got a clipper system coming our way. But until then, we've got some pretty mild weather in store all the way through the rest of the week. Not record-breaking, but definitely temperatures above normal with temperatures today right around that 40-degree mark. And even tomorrow, we're well above normal in the low to mid-30s and then back into the upper 30s for Thursday and in the 20s for Friday. All of those temperatures above normal. As we head into the weekend, we'll be watching a clipper system coming in from the west, and that will start to spread a little bit of light snow in here as we head into Sunday. Behind that system, we're going to have some windy conditions, so whatever snow we do get is going to be blowing around. Now, the timing of it is still a little in question in terms of does the heart of this come in on Sunday, or does it wait till Sunday night and Monday? So it could affect your Sunday, any commuting on Sunday, or it could wait for perfect timing for your Monday morning commute. So something we'll keep an eye on. Either way, it doesn't look like a lot of snow, a couple inches, but if you get a couple inches of fresh snow and you're dealing with 30, 35 mile an hour winds, then that's going to be a slight problem, it looks like.
Well, we will see what it looks like come the weekend. We'll try to figure it out. But yeah. I know that folks will pay attention. They'll watch the road reports and do as best they can when they're out there traveling. So let's be cautious about that. And remember that Weather Today is brought to you by Ryan Bonesack. He is with Equitable Agri-Finance, and he is providing long-term fixed rates for farmland financing. He's here to help our local farmers and ranchers. So be sure to give him a call, 701-261-6529. Much appreciated for all of your support, Ryan, and to those who go see him.
And Bridget, take a wild guess. You don't have it in front of you. Guess who we have on line one?
Is John there?
Oh boy, that's a... See, John, all you have to do is guess who, and I don't know why yours is the first name that comes to mind. What's on your mind today, John?
Dean. What day is it, Dean? Dean. What day is it, Dean?
Tuesday?
It's chemtrail day, Dean.
Bridget, did you know it's chemtrail day today?
I thankfully forgot about it.
Dean and I are trying to start a trend here in the Gulf of America.
Oh, what's that trend, John?
Chemtrail day is Tuesday. You know, hump day is Wednesday. Tuesday is chemtrail day.
Okay. See, I thought they changed it, but they're keeping it on Tuesdays now.
Well, I see one today. And remember, the magic number is 5. So I'm watching for 5 from the WAG Tower on Friday. Now, depending on what time I see the 5, you'll either get a text from me or a call.
Okay.
But, you know, remember, it's T-minus roughly 40 hours from the 5 chemtrail sighting that we get the precipitation.
Well, if I don't answer my phone, John, do you need Bridget's number to let her know?
You can try.
Don't go there because she'll like sick some sort of like bizarre virus AI bot thing on my phone. And next thing I know, my phone will be out in the back 40 plowing fields.
That's right. You just thought the evil eye was rough. No. It can get worse than that. Just so you know.
It's an autonomous plowing phone.
Oh, John.
Obviously, we have to talk about no-till with you. But anyway.
John, are you out and enjoying the weather at least?
Hell yeah. I'm out delivering in my Speedo, man.
Well, oh, that's not
as for company policy.
That's not a sight we want to see, that's for sure. John, thanks for joining us today. Have a great week. He's out in his... I don't even want to entertain that thought.
Not even sure I need to know more than that.
Thanks for drilling that, John. Oof, yeah. Yikes.
Oh, so for those who are in meetings today, even though the weather is beautiful to be outside, North Dakota Livestock Alliance is currently meeting here in Fargo. They are up at the Holiday Inn. And that is a group that works towards the betterment of confinement operations across the state, across all species. So if you wanted to talk about hogs or chickens or cows, that's what they are up to today. And I think that's especially important in a legislative year. I know that there are also attendees there from our major commodity groups like corn, soybeans, and others to make sure that all opinions and sides are heard. And if you are thinking about, I just said corn, soybeans, and others, what are we going to plant this year? That's actually a really big topic of conversation for a lot of farmers when they have to think about what's more profitable than others, et cetera. What shall they do? Well, NDSU is hosting its series of Get It Right production seminars. The first one will be on the 30th, which I believe is Thursday this week, and that will focus on sunflowers. If you're curious and you want to attend, it starts at 8:30 in the morning, goes till noon. These are webinars, so you can attend them virtually. You certainly are welcome to send me an email, ag@flagfamily.com, in order for me to send the link to you so we can make sure that you can be part of the discussion. So besides sunflowers, later on February 4th, they'll be talking about flax. February 10th, dry edible beans. And it just says beans in general, or edible beans in general. So this could include kidneys, pinks, reds, black turtles, all the above. I don't think they're specifying within that which particular dry bean. And then March 14th will be a discussion on canola. So for those who are curious, again, you can send me an email, ag@flagfamily.com. These are NDSU's Getting It Right Sunflower Production webinars. They'll be doing a whole series of them throughout the winter months. And if you wanted to attend those things in person, a lot of the NDSU staff is out at meetings presenting to farmers and others. In fact, tomorrow starts the Minot Ag Show. That'll be Wednesday, Thursday, Friday in Minot at the All Seasons Arena on the fairgrounds in Minot. And that's a great show. There's
You'll be up there, won't you?
Presence. Unless things don't go well with my current telephone transfer system that's happening, like I'm trying to transfer to new phones. If that doesn't go well, no, I'm not driving to Minot, but I do plan right now to be at Minot tomorrow.
All right.
Yeah.
Good deal.
Sometimes you got to fix all of the equipment before you can hit the road. It's not just flat tires. It's making sure everything else works.
All right. I'll be down in Lisbon tomorrow, Lisbon area.
Yep, the area.
Talking about the LRC, and we'll be talking to, I believe it's about 50 farmers down there, and just kind of educating our ag community and on how the LRC works, how it can help them. I know Gary is... he's in Kansas City today. He's in Omaha, Council Bluffs area tomorrow, talking to a couple of ag groups there. So the word is spreading about the LRC, and, you know, as long as it can help our farmers out or anybody in the ag community, that's fantastic. And if you ever want to know more about the LRC and how it can help your production or, you know, help your farming operation, shoot us an email, weather@flagfamily.com or ag@flagfamily.com. We'd be more than happy to help you.
Absolutely. And I like it when listeners give questions. We had one yesterday about, you know, a cow wandering out of a pasture and giving birth somewhere else. So if you have things like that that you're just curious about, feel free to let us know. We're happy to try to answer those anytime that we can. And there usually have been some pretty fun ones. And they bring up so many side topics, like the discussion about the fact that there still is cattle rustling that occurs even in this day and age. I had one last week when we had a guest on, you know, why are shelter belts disappearing out in the countryside? Some of it has to do with equipment and some just has to do with the natural life cycle of the trees that are out there. But it's maybe surprising to some to know that more farmers are planting trees But they're little. You just don't see them growing
right.
yet.
Right. They'll get there.
They'll get there eventually. Yes.
Well, we've got a special guest today out of state.
We do. We're going to talk to Scott Matthews. Scott is a rice farmer in Arkansas. We've had talked to Scott before about rice, mm-hmm. but it's not just about what's going on his farm. When I talked to Scott last week, he made a very colorful remark in a fabulous accent, and I can't quite do it, but he basically said, come and get your weather. It's cold down here. And so.
Oh, come on. You could do a better southern accent than that.
Scott's probably listening. I don't want to offend him. So we're going to talk about that, what's been happening there. You know, we realized that with the snow and very cold weather that went down into the southern states, we're going to see some crop loss. You know, citrus is
oranges
going to take a beating. Yep. And there's a lot of other crop that's been planted through the winter months. You know, if you're double cropping anything, I would say there's probably concern. I've seen Nebraska farmers make mention of their winter wheat crop doesn't look good right now.
Well, they haven't had any moisture, yeah.
Well, and then it got cold, yep. and you don't have any snow cover to insulate. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk to Scott about some of those types of things after we catch up with the American Ag Network, and we will hear the markets and be right back. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thank you for being here this afternoon. It is a bright and sunny day out there, and we're enjoying this weather. And I'm wondering if maybe our guest further to the south is feeling a little bit of a warm-up. We are joined today by Scott Matthews. Scott's a great friend of mine. He's down in Arkansas. Scott, how are you today?
We're good. We're in the mid-50s or a little better, and supposed to be in the 60s for the next 4 days. It's wonderful, Bridget.
Is that normal? Is that average temperature for you for this time of year?
Yeah. We're usually at least the high 40s, low 50s. You know, it might get close to freezing at night or maybe just a point or two below. But we just went through a stretch that you made a reference to that we were 75 hours below freezing. That's just insane. Oof. Just insane.
What about snow? I know they got snow to your south. But what? How did that affect your area?
Oh, and where are you, Scott? Where are you in Arkansas?
Okay. I'm in northeast Arkansas, and actually the snow that you're referencing was 500 miles south of me.
Okay, good.
It was historic.
Good.
It's a historic event. Oh. They got 12 inches 500 miles south of me. Actually, the snow was about 2 or 3 hours south of me before it started. We have had one snow this year, and that's about normal. Usually have a little snow last for a couple of days, 2 or 3 inches, and that's about it.
But the cold, that was the big thing. Record-setting cold, that obviously is not good for the crops down there.
Yeah. And I think Bridget said it. You know, the citrus crop, it's going to be yet to be seen. But I've talked to some of my friends on the coast who's lost like lemon trees and stuff like that already. And I think it's a little early. Most of the field crops, it's too early in the year to affect them, like winter wheat or something that hadn't got to the boot stage. I think they're okay there. But I think the ornamentals and the citrus crop is probably going to take a hit.
Boy, it would almost have to. I just can't imagine that they would have been able to take any mitigating measures to prevent that. You know, when you're in California and there's a chance of a frost, you see them light and smoke and running fans in order to move that cold air out. But I don't think they can do that in citrus orchards. I mean, you've got some familiarity, Scott, so go ahead.
The last snow for a lot of those places that was 2 to 3, the record snow was like in 1895, mm-hmm. and they got 8 to 12 inches. I mean, it's really unbelievable.
And was there anything that, and I was going to maybe sound dumb, when we know there's a storm coming here, we take precautions, right? We get ready. Dean and I make fun of the fact that everybody runs out to get bread and milk, but we're also in line getting bread and milk. What were there any precautions that folks were trying to take to mitigate some of the problems?
You know, I don't know how familiar you are with the interstate system, but the interstate system that runs through the southern third of Louisiana is called Interstate 10. Oh. They didn't even have snow equipment. Arkansas sent their snow plows, but it just doesn't happen. I mean, you know, if you've ever been in the bottom third, especially like Louisiana, a lot of the houses don't have underpinning. They're open because it stays so warm. They mow their yard in January. And I cannot imagine the structural damage of the water pipes all along the coastal areas.
Oh, that's just going to feel awful as they've, and you're right. No one has even talked about that yet and what it's going to bring to more and more folks once they start to realize the damage.
You know, and what made it worse, it wasn't just a cold snap. Occasional cold snap you can deal with. But when you put 8 to 12 inches of snow on the ground, it stays, y'all know, that the air temperature stays colder longer than it would, especially that far south. And so they've had multiple nights of below freezing weather with almost everything exposed.
With your contacts down there, Scott, you know, that ground, of course, is not frozen. What's their subsoil moisture like? Were they looking for some moisture, or is this going to be a detriment?
You know, I keep up with some people in South Louisiana, and they were needing the moisture. It's kind of been a low year for that. We, right here where I'm at in Northeast Arkansas, we caught about 7 inches in December, so we were pretty good. This freeze, I don't know how y'all's ground actually works, but I'm on rice and soybean ground here. And we've had enough freezes here that it's dried the ground back out. It freeze dried the ground or moisture out of it.
Really? So it's made your situation worse for the most part.
Well, we're not going to say worse right now.
Okay.
Because, you know, the thing that we're looking at, Bridget, right now in my area, you know, planning will start the last week of March, first of April, and we're looking at burn down. So this freeze actually sucked the excess moisture off our fields. Our fields are extremely flat. So, you know, it's going to be this next 4 days is going to be a fantastic time to get some burn down out.
That's a great point. Yeah. Okay. As a farmer mindset, and I'm listening and I'm thinking, you don't winterize a sprayer, do you? Like here, all of them be winterized and put in the sheds for the winter. You don't have to do that.
We do, just precautionary. Okay. I mean, we're far enough. I'm in a geographical oddity in Northeast Arkansas. I'm too far north to be considered south, and I'm too far south to be considered north. So we do have to take some precautions. I mean, our pipes are not exposed here. I mean, it occasionally, you know, last year it got really cold. Had a freak cold spell, got really cold, but it don't happen too often. But, yeah, we pretty much winterize things.
When you mentioned that about, like, plumbing potentially being exposed, what does that look like for irrigation? So, are you overhead irrigation? How does that work for you for rice? Will something like this affect you? And what about those folks further south of you? I'm not sure if they're irrigating down there or not.
You know, right here, there's almost no pivot or overhead irrigation. We're all flood or row irrigation. Our reservoirs, let's put it, right now, we got them at winter pool, and they're 5-6 feet deep, and that water never completely froze. Okay. You know, probably 67%. So, you know, the farther south probably got caught more off guard than here. You know, we take precautions with our, if we have a water loop well, you'll have to turn the pot upside down or something like that, you know, for the winter. Just this minor stuff. It probably didn't affect much irrigation stuff here. But when you get down in the southeast Arkansas or southeast United States, where they have use a lot of pivots on some rolling ground, especially in Mississippi, you know, there's probably some damages down there that they wasn't expecting.
So before we hit our bottom of the hour news, where we're going to take a little break there, quick question for you, Scott. What does your frost depth get to where you're at? I mean, for us, we've got to put frost buckets on backhoes. Sometimes you can't dig graves in cemeteries. The frost can be so deep, and we bury our water pipes quite a lot. What does it look like for you?
Yeah, we don't have that, Bridget.
Okay.
I mean, the ground freezes for a day or two, and it falls back out.
Oh.
You'll sink up to your ankles.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's no such thing as frost here. No.
Well, all right, that's a fair statement. All right, Scott, there's more questions to come, and for those who are listening and want to ask them as well, especially about rice production, it's not something we get to talk about here very often. You can reach us. Our phone line is 701-293-9000. Also, you can email us weather@flagfamily.com. And we hope you're following along on YouTube to watch the conversation. You can see our live stream on YouTube, Facebook, and Acres TV. We'll be back. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. And as you are into the new year and considering what your needs might be for the 2025 growing season, don't forget about JLA Insurance. God needed a caretaker for his planned paradise, so he made a farmer. Nate Thorsrud is owner and farmer on a family farm in Grandin, and by owner, he also has JLA Insurance. He understands what a farmer needs because he is one. Family-founded, crop and hail insurance. He's not going to sell you what you don't need. So give Nate a call, 701-371-0311. If you're shy, you can just say nate@jlainsurance.com. Our guest today is Scott Matthews. Scott farms in Northeast Arkansas. I was asked to do an Arkansas accent, but it'll have a Canadian twist. I live far enough north, Scott, so I'm not even going to do it. I'm just going to let you talk. How's that?
You know, I want to follow up on a question. You said something about frost. And
yeah.
I think, and y'all had a bad year this year, too. I think it was 1977 or 78. We actually had the town water pipes froze. It's like 8 to 10 inches. But, you know, since then, it hadn't been probably a third of that in the worst case scenario.
Yeah, that was 78. I was living in Chicago at the time. And the big blizzard of 78 yeah. and 79, it was... That was an extremely cold year. Same thing all the way down to the Gulf.
We had huge snows up here in those late 70s years. But with that cold, did you ever get much snow out of that type of thing, Scott?
You know, those late 70s, I was a teenager in the late 70s, and that was the big snow years. Okay. We actually missed a month of school.
Wow.
A whole month. Yeah.
Couldn't get there from here?
Yeah, we just couldn't go. I know. It was at that time, you know, they didn't have four wheelers. You had three wheelers. And the snow was too deep to go. You couldn't drive your three wheeler even though you had it because it was too deep. It was never seen anything before or after that.
Well, that's actually probably a good thing because if you and I know enough about three wheelers as kids to remember that they would probably kill you anyway. So it's best you didn't get to drive it. Yeah.
So Scott,
that dates me a little bit. Yeah.
Now, Scott, you said you raise rice and soybeans, rice and beans down there. How does the weather? Do you need different weather for each crop? In other words, is there more moisture needed for, let's say, the rice than the beans? Or what if you know you've got drought conditions coming up this spring and into summer? How do you prepare for that?
Well, we're in a unique area. We're 100% irrigated. I mean, so if it's drought, it's just unfortunate. If it's wet, you know, if you get planted, it's a good thing. Rice uses about 30 inches per acre foot a year. Bridget has probably followed some of my work. I work on water conservation. Matter of fact, our conference is tomorrow at ASU in Jonesboro is a soil and water conference. So, you know, I'm on the board there, and I have my water use down to about 16 to 18 inches through conservation messages. You know, our beans are a rotational crop. I'm on some kind of unique ground. It's really good for growing rice. And it's not really good for growing anything else. Our rotational crop is soybeans, and it's just a get-by crop for us, you know. And it's getting harder and harder with the inputs on it because we just don't make the yields that some places like Nebraska does or Iowa or somewhere, you know. So, but our main crop, our corn crop is rice, and it carries us. The weather, last year we had the most phenomenal weather year from April 1st to August 25th. And that's about the time we start harvest, but it was such a perfect year. We actually started about 7, 8, 10 days early on our rice harvest. Well, the weather was just literally perfect day and night. Most beautiful crop I've ever seen. I'm starting my 35th crop. It decided on the 25th of August to turn 100. Ugh. It turned 100 for 5 days.
Oh.
Well, that was during our dry down, when our grain was drying down, and it dried the grain down so quick, the rice grain kernel, it cracked it. Okay? And when you crack it, you don't get it back, so it lowers the quality. Then we had the hurricanes, and I don't know if y'all keep up with hurricanes that far north.
We had two,
and I mean, it was just like, I had 12.6 inches of rain in September. I don't need a drop in September. And I mean, that's just, you know, so we had the most perfect year all the way to the August 25th, and then Mother Nature decided to bite us a little bit. But we made it. We're going to get to go again. So
okay, you said that cracked, the 100 degree temperatures cracked the rice kernels. Is that considered like splits in soybeans? Is it because of it lowers cooking quality? Why does the cracked or the broken kernel matter?
What you want is like, I grow long grain whole rice.
And, by the way, it's really good rice. He sent me some.
You want that kernel intact, and you don't want it to dry down too quickly. And once it gets dry, you also don't want to rain to re-wet it, because that will crack it also. It's really a delicate crop.
Uh-huh.
So harvest is really critical. And it's kind of odd for that late in the year to have that long a warm spell, 100 degrees, because it didn't get 100 all year.
Wow.
And if we're going to have 100, it's usually the last week of July or the first week of September, and your rice is not completely headed then, so it's not a critical time. But this was a very bad time, and average, like when rice is drying down naturally, you lose about, we like to harvest around 18-19%, and usually lose about a quarter of a point a day on a good sunshiny day in late August, early September, and we were losing a point to a point and a quarter a day during that brutal 100 degree heat. And then it turned around and we got wet in September. It's just the absolute perfect year, horrible September.
At the time you didn't need it most.
Mm.
Scott, do you have anything planted in the ground right now in the land of double cropping, which is a bit unfamiliar for many of us? Is there anything that you are overwintering at this point?
No, rice is not conducive to cover crops exactly.
Mm-hmm.
We're working through that, and actually, you know, we've been working on that for like 30 years, but again, it's kind of a geographical location, the north and south thing, and you get into a vernalization process. All the seed is grown, all the cover crop seed is grown somewhere else. Seed's grown in the northwest or the southwest. Well, it really just don't fit right here. Now I have cover crops on my irrigation reservoirs, and I've done really well this winter. As a matter of fact, I drove around and looked at them this morning. They're beautiful. I got good cover crops, and very proud of that. But as far as field, you know, wheat, we used to grow some winter wheat here. It's kind of went away. Could come back, but hasn't. You know, but that's the only winter crop we would have here.
Have you talked to some of your counterparts down in Louisiana? You know, have they started to talk about what the aftermath is after having that snow and cold? You know, we talked about plumbing being exposed and pipes breaking and that type of thing. What other things might have been happening? Was that a heavy enough snow load to damage buildings? Because that will happen to us here too.
I would say that far south and as wet and heavy as that snow was probably, I'm saying it probably took a lot of buildings down, because I mean, they're not built for that far. I mean, that's a once in a lifetime event, or maybe once in two lifetime event. So I'm sure that, and we actually have that every 25 years ago. So here, you know, have a big heavy wet snow, but it'll be pretty isolated. It'll be like a band, but it will do some structural damage here also.
I think there was some livestock that might have been shivering.
The good thing about the South, you know, they got 12 inches of New Orleans, 500 miles south of me. It probably didn't last 2-3 days, and it was gone, completely gone. I mean, you didn't see any of it, you know, so that's a good thing. And it's probably today, I hadn't looked, but it's probably close to 70 there.
He's spot on. See, he could do weather down there. He's spot on.
He's a weather spotter for us now.
is right around 70 in New Orleans today.
When I talked to Scott on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, I still call it Twitter a lot. He makes mention of the fact that some of their wildlife, in particular snakes, are horrible, or at least they are horrible in my opinion. Please tell me they all died, Scott. Did everything? Did all the reptiles freeze so you don't have to worry about them? They're all gone? Please?
No. Just as it warms up, we'll see a snake. I mean, it's just, I took a picture in Twitter, probably saw it, or Bridget probably saw it on the X. I actually had dandelions make seed heads December 30th.
Yeah, I did
so
see that.
So that's how warm it's.
Wow.
It's been warm. I mean, it's been warm here. It's just.
So you said you're going to do burn down. You're not that far away from field prep, really. I mean, what other things do you have to do to get ready to start planting rice?
Well, we got to do quite a bit in the fall. We had that giant flood in September, but October and November was mostly dry, so we got a lot done. But, you know, I told you that we kind of got freeze-dried here 4 or 5 days ago. If they wasn't calling for rain on Thursday, we could probably go to the fill on the higher ground Thursday, Friday. If we needed to slick a fill off for any reason, you know, do a little maintenance on it, we could probably go to the fill the end of this week if it wasn't going to rain Thursday.
Field week in January.
And we would.
Did you say slick it off?
Yeah. Our ground's extremely flat. That's how we grow rice. I mean.
Right.
That's a hill for me. You know, 2.5 inches of a hill.
Yeah, that's a little different. That's pretty flat valley.
Yeah. You just think about a paper plate, and that's about how flat we are. Because, I mean, it has to be flat to grow rice, to hold water, you know. We don't have that rolling terrain like y'all have and everything. I want Bridget to come down here sometime and see this. I don't know that she'll get out of the truck for the snakes or the mosquitoes. But
mosquitoes don't scare me.
I would love for her to stand here, even at her height, and be able to look flat for miles.
He's right. But I do actually want to come down and see this. I mean, Scott's been generous enough to share some of the rice with me that they grow. And it's a wonderful product. And it is just a fun crop to see. We do have some wild rice north of us here in this region. And wild rice farmers are shy. They don't want to get on radio and talk about their production. Which does bring me to a question. When you have your U.S. Rice Growing Association meetings, do the wild rice folks come too, or is it just specifically more of the white rices?
No, it's wild rice.
Okay.
Wild rice is not rice. It's a grass.
That's true.
Two totally different things. Yeah.
It's true. We call it that, but it's very
different. They say wild rice, but it's not rice like we grow. It's a grass. It's the grass family.
See, that's why we talk to guys from other parts of the U.S. because they always know something a little different than us. For those who are also listening who are soybean farmers in this region, what's your variety? What's your day length on your soybean, Scott?
What is my what now?
So like up here, we might raise double O's or, you know, we've got short day lengths. What are you looking at for some of your soybean varieties for day lengths?
My soybeans will be from 4.6 to 4.9.
Wow. Okay. You have a lot more time than we do. That's impressive.
Yeah. 4.6, 4.9. Okay. You know, but before agriculture got so quick, there were some fives that was raised, you know, especially in double crop situations like behind wheat. Like if you had winter wheat, usually would harvest the winter wheat the first week of June. And you would plant a group five because you'd want to take advantage of any fall rains you got.
Okay.
And, but that's kind of went away kind of with the wheat. And it's also the idea, too, earlier is better, you know. It seems like we get earlier and earlier. You know, the guys that plant early here, I'm not one of them, but the guys that plant early, especially east of me, they'll grow the 4.2s and the 4.4s, you know. But we want a little safer, a little longer maturity.
Wow. Well, Scott, it is so much fun to always visit with you and just kind of get that regional update of what's happening in the central south part of the U.S., if you will. Yeah. So Scott, if folks want to follow you or listen to more of your story, where would they find you?
On the X. I'm easy to find. I appreciate y'all having me on.
Thank you, sir.
I can't imagine living up there. I see that snow and it just like, whew.
Oh, this is nothing. It's all melting. It's 40 here today. People are out in their shorts today. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Just remember, Scott, if I'm coming down to see rice and snakes, you're coming here to see snow.
Oh, that makes me cringe a little bit. I cannot imagine standing on a lake fishing in a hut. I cannot. Next. That is the same. No matter how much Bridget cringes about a snake, I cringe that much about in a house on ice.
I will make sure that you see pictures next week of agronomy on ice. I'll be standing on probably 25 to 26 inches of ice. Nice clear ice, by the way. Dropping a line in the water looking for a walleye.
I can't even fathom that.
Well, thank you, Scott, and we look forward to talking to you again down the road. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Thanks, Scott.
All right. We'll come back and we'll talk about weather and so much more. Be right back.
Hey, welcome back to Weather and Ag and Focus, 154 in the afternoon. Temperatures 41 degrees. This is, I just had to check. It is the end of January, and we were 23 below last week. Now we're at 41. Something doesn't seem right.
I'd settle for somewhere in the middle. I mean, it's January. I don't mind wearing my winter coat and gloves. Last week, I didn't even think anybody noticed it odd if I was wearing my bib coveralls in the grocery store. It just seemed like a regular day for everyone else.
Just crazy out there. I'll tell you what, a 60-degree spread in temperatures over a week. It has been a seesaw forecast. And, well, to round out the month, we're going to continue with the above-normal temperatures for the rest of the week with a little bit of light snow shower activity tonight, mainly in the Northern Valley, Northwest Minnesota, where they could pick up a half inch or so. We might see a few of those snow showers squeak down into the FM area, but it's not going to be anything to worry about. And then we're back in the 30s tomorrow, Thursday, 20s on Friday, which is still above normal. And then we're still tracking the possibility of a weak system coming in here over the weekend. Weak as in terms of snowfall totals, but it's expected to have a lot of wind with it Sunday, possibly lasting into Monday.
What's it going to blow around?
It's not going to blow anything around, but if we pick up a fresh inch and a half, and 30-mile-an-hour winds,
that can happen.
It doesn't take much to mess things up.
I don't need polished and glazed roads. I would like a donut that's polished and glazed, but I don't need a road. Thank you very kindly.
Well, I know we were touching on the subject because I had a few people ask me, with the new administration in here and with the concentration on the deportation of illegal immigrants, how is this going to affect our ag community?
Well, if you think about farm labor. All right, so this is purely my speculation and thoughts. And by the way, I don't really follow the news very well because it's just depressing. Yeah. But in the grand scheme of things, those who are probably farm labor in many areas that would be greatly affected would be produce production in the southwest part of the U.S. We do have a high number with dairy farms. And dairy farms probably have a better track record of having documented workers. But also remember, the first priorities to leave are folks with criminal records.
Right.
So I think it's going to be a little while through the millions of illegal aliens that are in the country. It's going to take a while until that is cleaned up. I do believe that, there'll be a lot of folks considered that if you are working diligently towards being a citizen, you are doing a lot of the good things here. You should probably, find a way to be fine. I don't have any insight in that other than a gut feeling and trying to have some common sense. But could this affect us? Yes. Now, we talk every week about autonomy and its growth within the agricultural sector. When you consider that the upfront cost for some of those expenses would be very high, but later, if you have a shortage of labor, we are finding folks that are saying, well, then I don't have to pay health insurance, social security taxes. I don't have all of the labor problems that go along with an actual employee. And some of those things can be done, whether it's autonomous weed machines, which we're actually going to talk about one of those next week with Agent, or if we are talking about more automation within livestock operations. So we'll figure out what a balance is. The world changes and turns every day. The first thing that's going to happen is if you have a criminal record, I would say that would be the first and foremost right. group that's going to be on their way out.
Because the first thing that comes to mind is, all right, if we're going to lose that labor in the fields, then sure. it's we have to replace it. That could be more expensive. The price, then there go the prices up. And
again, we talk about being the country that has the safest, cheapest, and most abundant food supply in the world, and that stands today, even with the growing inflation that we've had. But we still do have the cheapest and safest overall.
Right.
And will our food prices go up? They very much can continue to. Now, what can change some of that? You know, cheap labor isn't always going to be the factor because you still have to deal with transportation and so many other input costs that would affect it. So we'll see where it goes.
Excellent. All right. Well, for Bridget, myself, we want to thank everybody for joining us here today on Weather and Ag in Focus. Don't go anywhere. The Jay Thomas Show, that's coming up next.